Good evening. For WBAI News in New York, I'm Linda Perry with some of the news for Thursday, August 24th, 2017. We'll begin with some public shaming that went on at City Hall this week. It was against billionaire hedge fund manager Dan Loeb.
So what goes on in that mind? But I think the more you scratch it, the more you're going to find out that it's unacceptable.
While Loeb apologized for statements he made about Senate Minority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins, saying she has done more damage to people of color than anyone who has ever donned a hood because of her support for teachers' unions, an apology isn't good enough for New York politicians and public education advocates. They want those who received money from Loeb to give it back and for Loeb to step down from his post as chair of Success Academy Charter Schools. They operate 46 schools with 15,500 students in New York City. Brooklyn Zakaya Ansari is advocacy director for the Alliance for Quality Education. She's the mother of eight, grandmother of three.
Dan Loeb is someone who just recently, a few weeks ago, put out a statement, not even comparing, saying that our state senator, Andrea Stewart-Cousins, is worse than the KKK in regards to, as it pertains to black and brown children. Not only is that offensive, inflammatory, and just like ridiculous and disgusting, but his policies also, I believe, kind of show that that's in his head. Whatever came out verbally on Facebook is what he believes in regards to his policies on education and where he puts his dollars at.
Money from Loeb has funded the campaigns of senators who are now with the IDC, the Independent Democratic Conference, led by Jeff Klein. It often votes with Republicans, and it has sided with them to keep Stewart-Cousins out of the powerful majority leadership post. It often votes with Republicans to back charter schools, and New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, who has received money from Loeb, has used talking points from the charter movement's Families for Excellent Schools, where Loeb is a primary backer. Ansari wants to see the money promised to New York City public schools.
Governor Cuomo, who has been one of the folks who has, you know, one of the things we do as an organization, AQE, has been fighting for the campaign for fiscal equity dollars. 10 years, billions of dollars owed to New York schools all across the state. And we have yet to see those dollars come to schools, but yet we've seen cuts all over the place, right? Governor Cuomo, when he got into office, claimed that he was going to fund CFE, and he hasn't done that. So we are owed billions of dollars, right? So the impact of that is that Governor Cuomo has taken almost $200,000 from Dan Loeb personally, and the IDC, this Independent Democratic Conference, has taken dollars as well. Both these organizations, both of these groups of people, I should say, have done everything to stop funding CFE. So the governor said money doesn't matter and we don't need more money for schools, yet he is barely visiting any schools. And the Independent Democratic Conference decides to conference with the Republicans that constantly refuses to fund CFE, the DREAM Act, affordable housing, or any other policies that would really help and support black and brown children. So the question becomes, are those dollars affecting policy that legislators who are receiving them are passing or failing to pass, I should say. And I think we would challenge that, yes, they do kind of guide the policies that come down for people who take dollars like this. They don't just give them money. People like Dan Loeb and his toxic dollars don't just give them away just because. There's a transactional piece here. I give you money and this is what I want. And at the same time, you know, he sits on the school, Success Academy school board, and part of it is like he needs to resign. If 90+% of your population of children that you are over are black and brown children, you continue to pass these policies or say racist comments, what kind of things are you happening in your school? There's no doubt that we can pinpoint and show that these all point to the institutional racism, the way we fund schools, the way we allow rich, super rich folks to use their money to buy democracy and use it as a hammer to crush really powerful things like public education. It's extremely important for folks to pay attention and eyes wide open. When there are people who want to tear down statues and street signs, I think that's all good, but sometimes I think it's a feel-good way for folks to feel that they're doing something useful. What we really need folks to do to get black and brown and poor people all across this country who have been dealing with oppression for decades and centuries is to pay attention to the policies that these very folks who just want to tear down things are supporting, but also those who are laying silent in the midst of everything that's going on. Because if their policies don't match or don't uplift the very people who are being oppressed, then the words are just the words. The policies are really what matters. So I need folks out there to pay attention. Look up who Dan Loeb is. Who is Dan Loeb? Look at the page, the hedge clipper paper. See what are the other things that he's done. He has his hand in Puerto Rico and dismantling that. We see the same things that are happening here, closing of schools, hospitals, public buildings and other things being sold off, right? This is what he has his hands in. And so we need everybody to be paying attention. It's not enough to just call people out and have people apologize. We've been experiencing apologies for a number of years as black and brown communities. It's time for action to happen. And if this is really the resistance that everybody is claiming to be part of, then we will resist against the institutionalized racism that people are experiencing and call people out who are using their dollars to kind of smash our democracy.
We know that the more money that we put into schools, the better it is for our economy, right? And the broader the prosperity goes, you know, when we're investing in schools and investing in our communities.
Charles Kahn is leader and organizer with the Hedge Clippers, which has now released a new report on Dan Loeb.
When we let folks like Daniel Loeb and other hedge funds and private equity managers make the rules, you know, what we end up seeing is them enriching themselves. And in particular with Daniel Loeb, you know, not only does he make his money raising prescription drug prices, forcing austerity on Puerto Rico, investing in fossil fuels, destroying our planet, cutting jobs in upstate New York and tens of thousands of jobs across the country. Not only does he do all of those things to make his money, but on top of that, you know, he makes racist comments, right? On top of that, he calls people pedophiles, right? On top of that, he is happy to lie about people, right? Just because they disagree with him, right? He has shown a pattern of being an immoral person. And when you add that to how he makes his money, there's no reason that any group or organization that claims to be for people of color, that claims to be for New Yorkers, that claims to be for equality, should be taking money from him. It should go directly against their values.
Councilmember Danny Drum, a former teacher, is chair of the City Council's Education Committee. He's outraged by Loeb.
It's incomprehensible to me that someone like Daniel Loeb mind could conjure up these thoughts and these ideas about a leader so important and such a role model to everyone, but particularly to African Americans, to think that he could compare someone like that to the KKK. Not once, but twice.
Yeah.
And let me also add, he also has made derogatory remarks about LGBT people in his career. So what goes on in that mind? But I think the more you scratch it, the more you're going to find out that it's unacceptable.
That's right.
Now,
sure.
As chair of the Education Committee, I have always had my doubts about his role in education.
That's right.
Why do we have someone like that in a role of influencing young people?
Right.
Is he also going to instill these ideas in young people's minds?
An outrage over Loeb is shared by Upper West Side Councilmember Helen Rosenthal.
Daniel Loeb, I mean, I guess one has to say what he says out loud is repugnant. But you know that's what's in his thinking. So I don't think it's unfair to say that his influence is repugnant. He is repugnant. What he says is repugnant. And anyone who stands with him, whether it's Eva Moskowitz, who oversees the education of a lot of New York City children and has yet to kick him off her board, I would extend that repugnancy there. The responsibility that Eva has and has now chosen to abdicate by keeping this man on his board, but let's admit it, he's always been this way. So her choice of him in the first place shows terrible judgment. Of course, everyone should have already returned any donation from Daniel Loeb. I would extend that to his wife, Margaret Loeb, who, by the way, one of my opponents in my race still has a donation from Margaret Loeb. But, you know, it's 2017, people.
Hello.
What?
What the hell?
Right.
You gotta fight back?
You know, at a time when this president is glorifying racism, we don't need anyone of his kind here in New York. We won't accept it. I stand with Andrea Stewart Cousins, as I always have and always will. She is the duly elected leader of the Democratic State Senate. Everyone needs to open their eyes and come to that same conclusion. What Daniel Loeb has done is repugnant, and we have to remember, as the famous line in Chinatown, the fish rots from the head.
That's right.
For more on hedge fund billionaire Dan Loeb and where he gets his money and who he gives it to, go to hedgeclippers.org. And you're listening to the news on listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio. This is WBAI in New York, broadcasting at 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. In other news, the latest standardized test scores are out in New York State, but teachers are calling them virtually meaningless. Andrea Sears reports.
The scores for 3rd through 8th graders improved slightly in both math and English, but still only about 40% of students were rated proficient. Carl Korn with New York State United Teachers says the scores don't count for students and they shouldn't count for teachers either.
They're based on a broken testing system. They're rooted in the Common Core standards that are no longer being taught. And they're the foundation of a teacher evaluation system that has been totally discredited.
There is currently a moratorium on the use of standardized test scores for evaluating both teachers and students through the end of the 2018 to 2019 school year. But Korn notes that even if the scores aren't being used for evaluations now, they are still being tabulated.
And we believe the over-reliance on standardized testing and this test and punish agenda is what has fueled the strong opt-out movement in New York.
For the past 2 years, about 20% of students across the state have boycotted the standardized tests. The New York State Board of Regents takes up adoption of a new evaluation system in the next few months. Korn says NYSUT wants to see the current system repealed.
There's a lot more to the school experience than just testing and more testing. We think any evaluation system should look at everything that goes on in a school and be much more holistic in its approach.
NYSUT wants testing to be returned to what Korn calls its original purposes, providing an overview of the system, guiding instruction, and helping teachers help their students. For New York News Connection, I'm Andrea Sears.
Today, the New York City Women's Caucus released a new report, Not Making It Here, Why Are Women Underrepresented in New York City Politics? The report shows that only 13 New York City Council seats out of 51 are currently held by women. That's 26%, 10% lower than the average among the 100 most populous U.S. cities. And it might get worse since 4 current female council members are term limited. So there's a possibility for that number to drop even further to 9 in the coming year. There are many factors identified in this report which hold women back from running for office, factors including family obligations and discrimination. But there's also the factor that women aren't even aware that they could be successful if they do run for office. The report also points to many successes in countering inequality and for gender equity fought for by the Women's Caucus in the New York City Council. The report was issued today in advance of Women's Equality Day on August 26th. Which commemorates the Women's Suffrage Amendment, the 1920 certification of the 19th Amendment to the Constitution. This week, the United Nations said violence against protesters in Charlottesville should be condemned at the highest political level. The Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination issued the statement in Geneva. In it, the panel of rights experts highlights their concern at the horrific events and overly racist slogans, chants, and salutes of white supremacist groups who were at the rally earlier this August. Daniel Johnson has more.
32-year-old Heather Heyer died in Charlottesville, Virginia, earlier this month when a car plowed into her and others who were demonstrating against white nationalists. The appeal by the UN Rights Panel to the United States to reject the tragedy at the highest level comes amid fears that a failure to do so may lead to more incidents in the US in future. Anastasia Crickley is chairperson of the Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination.
If those things are not condemned unequivocally at the highest level, then there is a possibility that others can get the idea that they are appropriate and that they are conduct which is, if not condoned, at least will not be rejected.
The statement to the US comes as the UN panel continues its scheduled program of work to discuss progress on eliminating racial discrimination in other member states. In addition to their call to the US government to condemn the Charlottesville crimes, the rights experts also urge the promotion of understanding, tolerance and diversity between ethnic groups. Daniel Johnson, United Nations, Geneva.
Meanwhile, Charlottesville held an emergency closed session with the city manager today on the city's handling of security communications and governance. Residents, rally organizers, and law enforcement experts are among those who have criticized the city's handling of the lead-up to the white nationalist rally and the chaos and the violence that ensued. Anger boiled over at a city council meeting earlier this week where scores of people screamed and cursed at city council members. The city council in Charlottesville has called for an independent review of all decisions related not only to August 12th, but also to a July KKK rally and a prior torchlit rally of white nationalists at Emancipation Park. In other developments, Christopher Cantwell, a white nationalist from Keene, New Hampshire, turned himself in last night, and today he made an initial appearance in court. He faces two counts of the illegal use of tear gas or other gases and one count of malicious bodily injury with a caustic substance, explosive, or fire in connection with the torchlit rally on the University of Virginia campus the night before the white nationalist rally. Cantwell was widely seen on a Vice documentary about the white supremacist rally in Charlottesville. Cantwell acknowledged pepper spraying a counter demonstrator. And last night, a mayoral debate between only two of the mayoral Democratic candidates was held. Bill de Blasio and Sal Albanese were the two who debated each other. The issue of statues and monuments in New York City came up. Here's WNYC's Brian Lara, followed by Albanese and then de Blasio.
Briefly, please, but the country is now debating statues and monuments to slaveholders and others who've done horrible things, even if they've had other accomplishments. Mr. de Blasio has appointed a committee to examine those like that in New York City, but it won't report until after the election, and he has not pledged to take their recommendation. My question is, what should the criteria be? And what about Christopher Columbus in particular? Surely you both know enough about Christopher Columbus to have an opinion without waiting for a committee. Mr. Albanese.
Well, vintage de Blasio, after the election, he's commissioned, you know, the usual stalls and what have you. Listen, when it comes to the Confederate statues, that's an easy call. That represents slavery and racism. Those statutes should come down. When you start talking about Christopher Columbus, then you get into a slippery slope. Do we remove the statues of Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, all presidents that were involved in committing some vile crimes against Native Americans? It's a slippery slope, and I think we should educate people about what Columbus contributed and also the things that he did wrong and the other folks as well. Use it as an educational It's an educational project, and people can go to Columbus Square and write things and criticize Columbus, but once we start on that slope, by the way, the person, Melissa Mark Viverito, who's the disciple of Mr. de Blasio, is the woman that came up with this proposal about Christopher Columbus. Instead of worrying about her constituents in El Barrio that are being forced out, she's worried about Christopher Columbus. This is Bill's speaker.
Mr. de Blasio.
Well, first, I'm impressed that Sal is also managing to attack the Speaker of the City Council. She's the most progressive speaker in the history of the New York City Council. She is the first Latina to serve citywide in the history of New York City. She has done an outstanding job as a progressive leader of the City Council. This council's passed more progressive legislation we've ever seen in 4 years in our history. So I would urge you to think more carefully, Sal. On the question of the history of our nation, 400 years, that's unfortunately on top of all the very good things that have happened in this country, on top of the amazing achievements in terms of democracy and human rights and civil rights, this country has a lot of pain in its past and a lot of discrimination. We have to go about making sense of all of these areas of concern together. You cannot say to people, your pain is less than someone else's pain or greater than someone else's pain. We have to have a single approach for everyone. And yeah, that does take time. 90 days is not a long time to figure out an approach that we'll use for monuments of all kinds all over the city. But it's a chance to talk about that painful history, and most importantly, to make sure we do not repeat it, that we do not continue to affront people of color, women, members of the LGBT community with horrible symbols that degrade them. But we've got to do it in a mindful, smart way, with an inclusive, open process, and a single standard that we use for every type of monument in this city.
Mr. Albanese had a specific position on Christopher Columbus. Do you?
Look, I'm going to be very clear about this. I'm not going to do the name game here because we have to look at everything as a whole. I've said very clearly, a very complex historical figure. I'm an Italian-American. Italian-Americans have a long time been taught to be proud of Columbus. There's a lot of things not to be proud of as well. That's going to be a part of the process to make sense of how to handle things about a whole host of figures from our history.
So you're against?
Again, there's going to be a commission because anyone who thinks you can say, let's talk about this one problem in our history without talking about the other one, that's a mistake. We need to look at the whole picture.
So you would consider taking down the Columbus
statue? We have to look at the whole picture.
Okay, that's fair.
Quick follow-up then. Mr. Albanese, do you think, Mr. Albanese, that too much identity politics is hurting the Democratic Party nationally?
I do. I think, unfortunately, these kinds of issues, which create schisms, they take us away from the issues that we need to address, like affordable housing, like good schools, living wage jobs. We get into these issues, and sometimes, obviously, the Confederacy is an easy one. But when you start getting into areas which create schisms and slippery slopes, I think you got to be careful.
Forgive me for time, Mr. de Blasio. Is too much identity politics hurting the Democratic Party nationally?
I don't think that's the simple reality. The Democratic Party needs to change to a progressive economic platform. What Bernie Sanders was fighting for ultimately made the Democratic Party better, and we ended up on the platform. In 2016, it was the most progressive economic platform we ever had. Unfortunately, our party did not run on that platform, and that's part of what happened on November 8th. But here's the thing. When we talk about quote-unquote identity politics, the things we're talking about here are trying to address honest mistakes in our nation's history and being honest about them so we can heal them. There are a lot of people in this country who are still feeling the stain of racism, of sexism, of homophobia, of xenophobia. We can't walk away from that and act like it didn't happen. So why don't we look it in the face, surface it, be honest about it, talk about how we're going to transcend it and come up with a new standard in this country that respects every kind of American, while at the same time going to the heart of the matter, which I think, to your point, Brian, the heart of the matter is my party should stand for fundamental progressive economic change, for taxing the wealthy more than they're being taxed right now, and for making sure people,
For more on the debate, go to ny1.com. CBS will be hosting another mayoral debate on September 6th. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. Turning to cases of fraud, investigators are seeing much more insurance fraud that relies on keeping addicts hooked. Experts say it's a lethal multi-million-dollar cycle of intentional failure involving unscrupulous treatment providers who profit by keeping and ultimately killing their clients. A focal point for this fraud is in South Florida, where a law enforcement task force recently made more than 30 arrests. The FBI found unnecessary lab tests or faked urine samples, double billing, and illegal kickbacks. Some centers even withhold treatment or give patients addictive drugs so that they relapse and keep qualifying for coverage. And here in New York, Attorney General Eric Schneiderman announced a lawsuit and criminal charges today against pharmacist Hin Wong. He's 49. He comes from Manhattan, and his pharmacy is NY Pharmacy. The charges are for allegedly defrauding the New York State Medicaid program out of millions of dollars. Wong, who is a licensed pharmacist and who owns New York Pharmacy, located at 131 Walker Street in Manhattan, allegedly paid undercover agents posing as Medicaid recipients kickbacks for HIV prescriptions and for referring other Medicaid recipients to bring their prescriptions to New York Pharmacy. In other news, New York State Governor Andrew Cuomo held a ribbon-cutting ceremony for the Tappan Zee Bridge today. He renamed that bridge for his dad, Mario Cuomo. One span of the bridge will open to westbound traffic on Friday. This signals the near completion of the project to replace the 62-year-old Tappan Zee Bridge. It has served as the poster child for America's crumbling infrastructure. The second span is scheduled to be completed in the spring. And finally, a young man, a 19-year-old Keith Johnson of the Bronx, was pulled from the waters off Queens. He struggled to swim back to shore after entering the water near Rockaway Boardwalk around 6:30 p.m. on Wednesday. Police divers located Johnson around 8:30 p.m. He was rushed to St. John's Hospital, where he was pronounced dead. The case is being investigated, but be careful out there. And that's the WBAI Evening News for Thursday, August 24th, 2017. The news was produced with Daniel Johnson, Ikeem Killick, Reggie Johnson. I'm Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.